Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Sally O'Cordy, and welcome to Public Advocate. Today, my guest for the sixth time is Kathy Sinnott. She is a former Member of Parliament for the EU representing Ireland. And she and Joanna Jordan took a tremendous task upon themselves to save the children of Ireland. And both of them are very brave and important people, human beings on the face of the earth. So I am so eager to pick up Kathy Sinnott right now, and she will inform us as to what transpired in the Supreme Court and therefrom. Hello, Kathy. This is Sally. Kathy Sinnott, I'm going to put... Okay, I'm going to pick her up again, I hope.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, Kathy. I hear you now. I hope you hear me.
Okay, great. Great. No, well, I think we just got disconnected for a moment.
Well, that's good. I'm glad it was just for a moment. Well, please tell us about what happened at the Supreme Court and what has happened since, basically.
Well, a lot has happened since. About early May, we were called back into the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court decided that we were right, that it was too hard for citizens to, you know, to successfully petition when government cheats in a referendum, right? And so they created a formula that would help in the future for citizens to petition when governments cheat. And remember, the Irish government has cheated in every major referendum since the 1990s, right? So, you know, we know this is going to happen. But they said that the gap was too large to nullify the results of the children's rights, which was, so we won, but we lost, because it was tragic that the children's rights went through. And, you know, the fact that their cheating had a lot to do with that gap seemed to be lost on the Supreme Court. About mid-May, the children's rights amendments have entered our Constitution. And to give you some idea of what that means, I mean, it's just horrendous. They removed, that amendment removed the guarantee that every child in Ireland had that their needs would be met. And no matter what it cost, that their basic fundamental needs would be met, and they would be met in a way that respected their fundamental and natural rights. In other words, you know, if your mother is poor or your mother is sick, we don't confiscate you. We give the kind of support that your mother needs so that she can take care of you, right?
Right.
And in place of that, we have now forced adoption, the state controlling the best interests of the child, and anything the state says is the best interest of the child is, by definition in our Constitution, et cetera. Just horrendous. And the state can interfere even if parents have done nothing. Now, this came in 2 weeks before our marriage referendum. And the effect of the marriage referendum on this, and we formed a group, John Waters and I and Jerry Fahey, who fought the children's rights, formed a group during the marriage referendum called First Families First to point out to the electorate that the effect of putting the particular amendment in the Constitution in the section on family was that it constitutionally would get rid of the notion that the biological connection between parent and child had any weight in law. So that is wiped out, in that the fact that you conceived a child and carried a child and birthed a child, or if you're a man, you conceived a child, has no weight in law under the Irish Constitution now. And none of those changes, either in children's rights or marriage referendum, did the voter have any idea about. So now we have an absolutely draconian constitution when it comes to parents. And get this, bankrolling the children's rights group that asked everybody to vote yes 2-3 years ago was Atlantic Philanthropies. So this is Chuck Feeney, it's the Rothschilds, Bill Gates, you know, all of these people. And they were bankrolling that. Now they bankrolled the marriage referendum, and in now they're bankrolling, in between those two referendums, a law was passed that created an agency called TULSA, which is in charge of child confiscation, adoption, you know, whatever, the best interests of the child. And again, Atlantic Philanthropies is bankrolling TULSA, a government agency. So the best
interest of the child for the listeners is not in the best interest of the child. It's just a phrase that they cloak all kinds of travesties in.
That's right. It's state control of children. It's the state decides the best interest of the child. When the state doesn't even know your child or love your child or care about your child, but they have the right to decide what's best for your child. And, of course, this is has huge implications for things very close to our hearts, like forced vaccination.
And you trafficking. Trafficking.
Oh, yes, legal trafficking, which is called forced adoption. And child confiscation, which in England is now running at 5,000 children, mostly babies a year, who are being confiscated from their parents.
Without cause, everybody who's listening, without cause.
Without cause. And there's an amazing book that's just been published by an agony aunt in England, the famous agony aunt called Denise, I can't remember her last name. And she's pointing out that she gives an example where mother had 5 children, 3 freckled redheads like I am, and 2 blondes, 2 fair-skinned blondes. And which children did they come and take? The 2 fair-skinned blondes. The fact that they took her blonde children, you ask yourself, well, if they didn't think she was a fit mother, why didn't they take the freckled redhead? The mother had the distinct impression that the social workers came in to get 2 children, like you would get a puppy, and saw the 2 blondes and took them. And the courts, because of legislation like this, are standing over this. That's what's happening in England, and that's what we very soon will see in Ireland.
Well, this is, you know, something you always say prayers. Well, I have given many prayers to this scenario to prevent it, hopefully, to save the children of Ireland. They're all imperiled right now. I'm assuming this law is in effect currently.
Yes, it's in effect currently, but we have a little breathing space because when something goes in the Constitution, there's a little time lag before all the legislation is put in place. But it's there, it's waiting. The wealthy elite are pumping money into the agency for child confiscation, and everything is in place.
Okay, I hear a disruption on my end of the phone. It stopped right now. But anyway, I will continue. I wanted to ask you, do you hear a noise or is it just us?
Am I what?
Do you hear a noise in the background or is it just me?
Oh, a bunch of dogs were barking.
No, I don't think it was dogs. It was words. Anyway, let me continue. I wanted to ask, you were thinking of taking it to the European court. Is this true?
We don't know yet. Because the costs of the case have not been hammered out, that we're not at that point yet. So the legal team have not said either way. But we still have to go back to court to see who pays the cost. Now, it's obvious that if the court found against the state in terms of the fact they cheated and the fact that the law was made, did make it difficult for citizens, and the fact that the court have made adjustments, would automatically say that the cost should be awarded to us. But we don't know. We won't know until that happens.
The cost should be awarded to you? What do you mean the cost?
No, the cost, in other words, the state who cheated in the referendum and fought this case should pay the cost for both sides.
I see, because they were considering charging Joanna Jordan to fine her for the legal costs for this case, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's right, and that's what the state wants to happen. And yet the court found that Joanna had raised an important issue and that there was a problem, and that should mean that they have to pay the cost. But then we don't know. But until that happens, I don't think the legal team are going to say either way in terms of Europe.
Okay, so when you get through this period of time, is it possible to take it to the European court? Is that even a possibility?
It is possible, and many cases are taken, but not very many cases are heard. 0.02% of cases that go to the European Court are heard. So it's very small.
Now the vote was very close. The initial vote was very close from what I recall. So why are they saying there was a large enough gap to justify a yes vote?
The gap was 56% to 44, to 44, 56 to 44. So that is, they see that as a 12-point gap.
That's not very much.
It's not very much, but, I mean, we've had referendums where the gap has been, 0.10%. So they consider that a very significant gap. But, we argued very effectively and very well that we have no idea what the vote would have been if the state hadn't cheated, that the cheating was on such a massive scale. I mean, every home in the country received a beautiful booklet, so supposedly informing them about what the referendum meant, every home in the country. So, how do you decide what the gap would have been? But they, I think the state did not want to overturn, the court did not want to overturn children's rights, but couldn't get away with, saying we weren't correct.
So at this point, there's nothing you can do currently, it looks like a very, very slim chance that your case will be heard by the European Court. I wouldn't move to Ireland under any circumstances if I had children.
Well, at the moment, for instance, vaccines aren't mandatory. But now they have everything they need in the Constitution to make them mandatory, just to give one example. So, it's not a safe bet anymore. And families were escaping from England to come to Ireland. And now, that escape route is very problematic. Things don't happen overnight.
Now, you were just saying that all vaccines are mandatory for whom in Ireland?
No, no vaccines are mandatory in Ireland. No vaccines are mandatory. I'm saying they now have in the Constitution what they need to make them mandatory, which they couldn't do before. Couldn't do that before because of the rights of parents. But now the state has the right.
And you have also told me that in countries that have passed the rights of the child, they are executing children. So they'll protect your rights but not your life.
Well, we have now countries based on the rights of the child, like Belgium, where a child can say they want to die and parents cannot stop that decision. You know, a child could be advised by their doctor, and children would not even know what they're asking for, really, in any real sense, you know. And in Belgium, that's now legal, that with a doctor's signature, a child can be put to death.
And but also, you were saying in an African nation that had passed, that children were being executed. I don't know how they were being murdered, but the rights of the child did not defend them, their life. It did not defend their life.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. No, that's true. People talk about the rights of the child as if it protects children. No, most of the African, in fact, all but Somalia have signed up, have ratified the rights of the child. Muslim countries have reserved the right not to observe it if it contradicts Sharia law. But in all those countries, you have child soldiers and child abduction and child trafficking, and the rights of the child has nothing to say to that. You know, it hasn't protected any children.
Right, yeah.
The
wording is always false when they're trying to get away with terrible things. I wanted, at this point, if you don't mind, when we spoke last time, and you mentioned it in just kind of an off-the-cuff way, but I interview parents of vaccine-injured children, and your child was severely vaccine injured, and we've never spoken of this. Would you like to explain to the audience
what
transpired? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, he's profoundly would be what he would be diagnosed as. He was a very healthy baby, a little bit colicky. He had a cousin 4 days older, a little boy, 4 days older than him. And for the first 4 months, my son, who was 4 days younger, was always ahead of his cousin. He had his head up first. You know, he did everything first. And then he had his vaccine, and he lost everything and spent much of the next 3 years screaming and crying. He has epilepsy. He has a level of cerebral palsy, and he has profound autism. He doesn't speak. He isn't able to, you know, there's very little he can do. We've given him, since I defeated the government in court about education, he has gained a much better quality of life. But he still is very, very dependent on being dressed and, you know, someone to help him eat and all of these things. Now, many years later, when he was 17, he was given a flu shot, and by the next day, he couldn't even lift his head off the pillow. He was so sick, and he just had flu after flu, just one killer flu after another, until he was wheelchair-bound. And over 3 years, he went down to 65 pounds, and he's 5'5" tall, and he was literally dying. And we then learned quite a bit about diet and things like that and brought him back from the edge. And about 15 years ago, about 6 years after that, he I was asked, could he have a hepatitis vaccine? And I said no. And I got 5 phone calls, very pressuring. And every time I said no, he couldn't have it. He was in a day service for a few days a week. And then one day I was informed he was in the emergency room. His epilepsy had gone out of control. He was sitting all day, and this carried on for months. And so with Freedom of Information, I got the information from that service and discovered that the day he was in the emergency room is the day they vaccinated everyone in his room.
Oh.
So I am 99.9% sure, in fact, I'm 100% sure that they went ahead and vaccinated him, thinking, sure, he can't talk. He won't ever be able to say and tell her. And that day he wound up in the emergency room, and his epilepsy has never achieved the kind of control that it had at that point. So, you know, he's a triple vaccine victim on, you know, 3 different vaccines. And it's just, you know, when you think in those terms, you realize that these people are criminals.
Yes.
You know, no one has been willing to acknowledge what happened to him. You know, doctors run scared. In fact, many doctors have told me, yes, we see it all the time. Doctors that aren't his doctor, of course, because then they're defensive. But that is what's happening, and it's happening wholesale.
I am very sorry to hear how much your son has suffered. It's very serious, and only got serious, more serious, and more horrible. Is he in pain or is he not in pain?
Sometimes. I mean, you know, his epilepsy is a real problem to him, and he can't tell us when he feels it come on. He has suffered several injuries from drop falls. He has terrible stomach conditions, which we have. He's on a very, very, very strict diet, and that has helped a lot. But he can't communicate. You know, I mean, his life, all of his normalcy was taken from him. And, you know, I have seen so many people like him. I mean, we treasure him. He has always lived at home. He's with us at home, and he is an absolute heart of our family. But it wasn't fair on him either. And for them to continue to deny it and cause this kind of problems for people and plan to do it into the future is completely criminal.
Well, I always say in regard to vaccines, the crime is in the offering, let alone the implementation, because we are never told the truth. So even every person who has a vaccine-injured child I know of had a choice, but they were lied to. So until we can stop people lying for profit, choice is irrelevant, and the crime is in the offering. How difficult for you, Kathy.
Yes, I've wondered why. And very good. You know, I had recently, and someone, a friend of mine who came 2 weeks ago, and he was touched with the relic, and his control of his epilepsy has never been so good since really before, for years and years and years. So we've a lot to be thankful for. We're hoping that this healing will you know, be long-lasting, and this is just a little reprieve. We're very, very thankful for this. He's had just a few little short, mild kind of spasms. So we're very, very thankful. And we're very thankful for him. He is just an amazing human being. And serving him is a privilege. But that doesn't change the fact that doing that to him was criminal.
Absolutely. A friend of mine whose child had very similar situation to your child from the DTaP vaccine. It was just one vaccine, and he had brain damage, and he was 55 pounds at the age of 23 when he passed. Yeah. But he had seizures he was given medication for, which increased them from 3 a day to 100 a day. And he found...
Oh, my goodness.
Well, these were the kind of seizures where your entire body would cramp up and cut off your air supply, so he would turn blue 100 times
yes.
a day. Cannabis oil, which he got and is legal in Denver, drove them from 100 to zero seizures a day, but he couldn't afford it. It was the price of his mortgage. So eventually one of those turning blue seizures turned into death, you know?
A fatal seizure. This is it. This is something we all live with all the time, and it's just horrendous. Well, you know, I remember once talking to a public health doctor, and this is one that really thought. And I said, you know, it's incredible, but, you know, they make profit on a vaccine, and then once they damage you, then they're making money all your life on epileptic medications and all kinds of medication. And I said, you know, it almost sounds like a business strategy, but of course it isn't. And he just looked at me. This is a public health doctor. And he just looked at me and he said, are you so sure it's not?
Right.
You know, that what you do is you create a lifetime customer. When you damage somebody,
well,
or even
insurance here does not cover anything your child needs once they are vaccine damaged. The only thing that you can get from through the allopathic system only further damage your child. So truly, health insurance for these people is irrelevant. Everything
That's
comes
right.
out of pocket, and if you can't afford what's out of pocket, then your child suffers. And your insurance is just a gift to the insurance company because you can't use anything it would cover.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, absolutely. No, there's a real disregard for the dignity of the person. And this is what we saw, a complete disregard for the natural law in the idea of parents being able to make an informed choice to, you know, all of this. And it's a very, very warped world around, you know, children's rights, vaccination. All of these things go together.
Yes, absolutely. They go hand in hand. It's all one big plan of greed, the population, and control. And I keep telling people, if there's anything in the world that's wrong, that doesn't have to do with greed, the population, or control, I'm interested to know what it is. Because they seem to be the big three, and vaccination is like the poster child for all three.
Well, you know, there's, I think, one of the other factors, and I don't know, and maybe I'm wrong, but if you go back and look at Margaret Sanger, and of course, you know who Margaret Sanger is. She was the founder of Planned Parenthood. And one of the things that she wrote a lot about with the kind of human beings we had to create to control population. And they basically, if it was a beehive, they were the drone, the worker bees. We need to create these people that had no interest or skill in relating, who would just work. So therefore, they wouldn't start families or anything. And every once in a while, I've thought, is autism a big experiment? You know, I mean, yes, there are a lot of them that are so damaged they will never work. But then some of them, you know, are, you know, able to work all the time, just do one job, one task well, aren't interested or able to form family relationships in terms of starting their own family or anything. Is this in some way part of the Margaret Sanger agenda, where she wanted scientists, you know, she was a eugenicist, not just to get rid of what she considered undesirable, but to create new type of specialized human beings that wouldn't, you know, have any requirements for, you know, for family or children or anything like that.
Well, you are not the first person that I have heard say this. They haven't credited Margaret Sanger when they did say it. But I was reading an article the other day that backs up what others have said and you just said now, which is that they want people who are autistic people are loyal and task-oriented. So that's great. Loyal, I'm presuming, is like being indoctrinated. You don't question. And task-oriented. And if this is, in fact, what they're trying to create, oh, please.
Well, and of course, for everyone that has kind of ability to just stay on task and, you know, look at that computer and do it, you're going to be throwing away 30 or 40 people, you know. And Margaret Sanger, if you go back to her work, you know, she says this. She says that 80% of the human race should not be allowed to breed, as she would have called it. And she talks about the importance of utilizing that 80% for, you know, the tasks that need to be done, but that they don't have any other interest. You know, they don't, they're just, will do what they're told to do. And it's an interesting, I mean, warped mind.
Planned Parenthood is wildly in support of vaccines. You know, and they certainly show their colors in terms of the HPV vaccine, because it has to be, it must be a secret from the parent. The parent is not to know of vaccines without parental knowledge or consent has already passed in California, and they passed a resolution in support of this bill here in New York at the city level, and I was wondering, why haven't I heard about this bill coming forward? Because they have now a resolution from half the state, being New York City, the population of the state, endorsing this STD vaccines without parental consent, which, as I say, Planned Parenthood is like the sole cheerleader for this. And it turns out they have now added the HPV vaccine to the CDC recommended schedule. So they probably don't need this law anymore, because they'll take away all the exemptions, and it's already now on the schedule for 11 and 12-year-olds.
Yeah, well, see, this is it. You know, you always have to question when people are sneaking around in the dark about things, especially our politicians. But yes, you know, I mean, again, it comes down to the fact that the single biggest side effect, adverse reaction of vaccination of all kinds, but especially the HPV, is infertility. So it's a no-brainer why Planned Parenthood are, you know, promoting this. Of course, they wouldn't promote it if they weren't going to make money on it as well, because, you know, it came out in a Planned Parenthood memo that one of the reasons they push contraceptives and sex ed is because then they downstream will make a lot of money on abortion, because they don't work. You know, you push contraception and, you know, this on young teenagers, what you're really going to get is a lot of unplanned pregnancies. As they say, they make the money on the contraceptives, and then they make the money on the abortions, they make the money on the STDs, and now they'll make money on the vaccine.
Well, we are having global actions, Kathy, and perhaps you'd like to do something in Ireland. I don't know if you have time. I know you're among the busiest women I know, and certainly spearheading really important efforts. I am so sad about the Supreme Court's decision. I know that you felt that they would not allow this. So it must have been a huge disappointment to you.
Well, it was.
I
felt we would win something, and we did win something, but the stakes were so high on children's rights. I was just so sad that we lost that, because, you know, now, you know, parents, as it develops, we'll see a reign of terror here, just the way they have in England. parents of all. It used to just be poor parents. Now all parents are watching over their shoulder in England.
Well, I want to tell you about a bill that was here in the United States, and that was to pay social workers for the removal of children, $4,000 to permanently remove a child, $6,000 to permanently remove a disabled child. Now, So I made an event on Facebook for everybody to call their legislators and say that they don't want them to sign on to that bill. They want them to oppose it. So I was told, oh, it's in before it goes to the Senate, it's in another committee. But in the interim, I read the bill, and it said this is not a controversial bill. If you can imagine, you have served. It actually said on the legislation, this is not a controversial bill. So
that is incredible.
So I got the runaround from the Senate committee it was supposed to be on. Everybody, turns out, it not only had passed the House and the Senate with 100% support, at least in the House. I'm not sure about the Senate, but 100% support in the House, if you can imagine. 100%.
People probably hadn't even read it.
What I'm basically saying is they changed the number of the bill so nobody could follow the bill. Here I am protesting something that's already passed.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
That is just horrendous. But that is what we're looking at. I'll have to keep my eyes open in Ireland because, they can pass whatever they like at this stage. They've got the Constitution. So that is so horrendous, and it really shows what it's about. It really shows what the whole thing is about. It's about, I even thought in our marriage referendum that, everybody was arguing about the substantive issue of same-sex marriage, and not that that wasn't important to argue, but I was trying to say to people, this is a sleight of hand. While everyone is tied up in that issue, they're going to totally control children and have the right to say that motherhood and fatherhood have no legal basis when it comes to who parents a child. And, it was just incredibly frustrating to see young people, 95% of Irish young people, voting yes. And they are going to be the parents in the family court saying, but I'm the mom. And the judge saying, well, you're not parent one, and now you're not even going to be parent two because this stranger over there is going to be parent two.
And also we have to point out, for people who may not realize this, and I did not realize this when I first embarked on this journey, is that there are no, these are private courts. There are no, there's no public, there's no jury. Nobody from the public gets to witness what is transpiring.
No, because it's what's called in camera. And the idea is that to protect children, they have to be secret. It has to be behind closed doors and secret. And that's so-called to protect children. But so decades ago, it ceased protecting children, and now it protects the state and the social workers working for the state and against parents. And if parents tell anybody about it, they run the risk of being considered in contempt of court, and then the judge gets angry because they all know they're not up to scrutiny. Then the judge gets angry, and the parent risks never seeing their child again. And now with forced adoption, they won't ever see their child again.
Well, it's interesting. The NDAA here, there was a provision, I think it's, I don't want to say the number because I can't remember, but basically they could disappear anybody without an accusation. What got me off the couch is there was no caveat in terms of 18 or older. It was, there was no age mentioned. So, of course, I think trafficking, and I certainly did everything I could to not only stop that, but to get a resolution passed against it locally.
That's right.
But
that's
all
right.
I can say is that, you know, people can be disappeared here and no explanation, no court, no nothing.
That's right. No, it's, we live in very, very strange times. And you would say to yourself, why would anybody want it to be like this? Why are we doing this? And then you realize, well, we've been here before. We've been here before, you know, with Hitler, and we've been here before with Stalin, and we've been here before, you know, it's only technology has made it so much more disastrous when we do these things. And, you know, it just comes back from a complete disregard of the human person, family, and basic values.
Well, do you think that we will win this all-out, you know, battle?
I think it's going to take time. I think we're getting deeper and deeper down the rabbit hole, and I think it's only when after Reign of Terror. I mean, when you think about it, these things go on for years. And it gets worse and worse, and people just scurry around and hope they won't be noticed and hope their children will be okay and hope it's not going to happen to them. And it's only when it becomes pinpoint, a critical mass, that people really just, they have no more. We almost have to have a reign of terror first, and it to reach its logical conclusion, for people to get to the point. It almost has to fall apart first. And, of course, these things do fall apart. I remember John Waters saying to me, look, they're like joyriders. They've stolen the car. They're racing around the streets, endangering everybody. But eventually, they'll hit a post. They'll hit the lamppost. And unfortunately, before they hit the lamppost and it all bellies up for them and it all falls apart and we go back, we say, look, where did we go wrong? A lot of people are going to be hurt and damaged. And that's the problem.
And as I say to people about vaccines, while we're talking about what might happen, there are 4 children dying in every large hospital in America, 2 dying in every single day. While we're talking about what might happen, this is actually happening. So
that's right. And it's being predicted now with, I think, accuracy, that we're going to get to the point where we're at the point where it's almost, you know, we're getting up there for 1 in 50, 1 in 40 children, 1 in 30 children. Well, when it gets to 1 in 2 children that are damaged in some way, are we going to wake up then? Are we going to wake up when
the prediction is in 2025, 1 in 2 children will be autistic. And as Polly Tomey said, you'll either be autistic or you'll care for someone who is.
Yes, and that doesn't even include the children who react in a different way, like asthma or something else. That's
right,
not even,
certainly.
You know,
right?
And at what
Absolutely.
Point do we hide? At what point do we run to the hills and hide our children and don't even tell anybody we had a baby? Just
I have to interrupt you at this point. We're about to get cut off, Kathy Sinnott.
Oh, no
problem. Thank you for being my guest. But I want to say on June 20th and 21st, global solidarity to reject vaccine tyranny. Thank you for being.